You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, and joining us is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. Your concern is well received.
Well, we've been chomping at the top 20 toxins that we give our children, thinking that they're going to be safe. And we talked about fluoride and antibacterial soap and getting out of the sun and putting tons of wonderful sunscreen on your skin last time.
And yeah, that was still the little bullets. Let's go for the heavy artillery now.
That's right. We're going to head into some real controversial areas because
we don't normally do that, do we? No, not ever. I feel very strongly that we act this way out of fear. You know, when we don't let children go out to play with strangers, it's because we're afraid that the stranger will harm them or may harm them. When we don't let them into eating something, it's because we're afraid that it might be, I don't know, whatever, wrong, right?
Yeah.
And the sunscreen and the antibacterial soap, those are in our attempt to prevent damage. But it's the wrong perspective. It's the wrong gauge. You know, we talked about this earlier, and I'm reminded of it. It's just as if a person were judging whether the car is needing gas or not by how the engine is running.
Yeah, the engine's running, so I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. So if you don't ever look at the gauge, the fuel gauge that tells you, oh, you only have a quarter tank left, you better pull over at the next station or else. Instead, you only listen. Is the engine running? I'm good. Well, if that's what you use for your gauge, that when you run out of gas, it's going to mean that you're going to have to get a walk of 10 miles or more to the next gas station with a can.
Yeah, and if we take it to extremes, then it becomes a joke, right? Like, I was just thinking as you were talking about, dangers and fear and everything, in the wintertime, my next door neighbor made a snow cave, right? There was all this snow, so he dug out this little cave and the kids would go in and play. And when I went over to chat with him, it had been melting a little bit, and the top of the snow cave actually had a hole that was big enough if his son wanted to, he could climb through this hole and get into the cave from the top instead of from the side. And
yes,
we're standing there and we're talking for 10 or 15 minutes, and what is his son doing? He is jumping on top of the snow cave, right? And of course, it's only 2 or 3 feet drop if he went through, but we know that if he jumped and this thing actually was weak enough that it wouldn't hold him from jumping, that he would fall, he'd get scared, he'd cry, he might, hurt himself a little bit. And, of course, then the mom would be, what were you guys thinking sort of thing. And he and I are standing there. Neither of us are making any attempt to tell his son, don't do this, you could hurt yourself. And I said to my friend, my neighbor, I said, I'm just kind of curious as to what you think your wife would be doing if she was out here right now. And he laughed. He says, there's no doubt she'd be freaking out and telling him to stop doing that, right? And I says, yeah.
Yes.
Kind of interesting that we're here watching him and just we're kind of waiting to see what happens, right? And she would be like stopping him.
Right, and so here's the thing, right? The overprotective mindset will prevent this boy having a very valuable experience.
Right.
Because it would have been perfect if he actually crashed. He wouldn't have killed himself. He might have not even do any more than just simply realize that when you push on some material, it gives, and the consequences could be difficult.
Right.
And it's great to learn some of these lessons early in small, reasonably protected terrain, because if you end up bouncing, I don't know, somewhere else, right, on a branch of a tree 20 feet over a creek or something like that, you may end up hurting yourself badly.
Right. Well, and then a few weeks ago, I was at a house party, and one of the guests there decided it was time for her to go home, and she had ridden her bike. So we have to assume that she rides her bike everywhere, right? So she got out and got on her bike, and for whatever reason, fell over. And she broke her arm.
Oh, my God.
So I'm thinking, you know, okay, you know, we should make a law. If you go out to a house party and it's past 10 o'clock at night, you should not be allowed to ride your bike because it's dangerous, right?
Was she drinking?
No, well, she might have had a glass of wine, but it was long.
Not to a point that it would have a role, yeah?
You wouldn't think it would. I mean, she was fine. She was sober and she could walk and everything else, right? But she had. So, you know, my point being that, you know, we tell everybody, you know, ride bikes and everything else, and then every once in a while somebody falls on their bike and they hurt themselves. And that's not a reason to stop the biking. It's a reason to make sure that we know how to get on off our bikes, okay, and that we know that accidents happen.
Yes.
So, you know, you can take these things to such an extreme that, and I think that's what we've done with the antibacterial movement, right? It's like, oh, these germs are really bad, but, you know, we've got a whole pile of germs or bacteria in our stomach that their job is to help us digest food, so.
Exactly. So let's slip in another one of these, which is the over-the-counter drugs and cough syrup.
Mm.
That made number 7 on that famous list.
Right.
And here's a line from that article. Cough syrup has been scientifically proven to be absolutely worthless in preventing coughs. Well, that's a given. I mean, it's not used to prevent. It's used for stop the cough. So, but why is the child coughing? The reason it's coughing is because it has phlegm or something in the lungs or in the bronchi, and it's trying to push it out. The body is actually trying to expectorate the stuff out. So the cough is actually sort of a mechanism that's trying to expel the stuff it doesn't want. So when you suppress it, what have you accomplished? You actually
In my mind, what you've accomplished is the child can get some sleep.
Sure. I agree. If the child's so tired that it needs to get some sleep, maybe it's intelligent to dope him. Maybe. But you may as well blow some... never mind. I'm not going to suggest the use of illegal things on your children.
Oh, good. And I guess the other side of it is that there are other things that we could give the children that would be just as effective and not nearly as toxic. Like, you know, steam, for example. I remember when I was a kid and I had a cold, my mom put my head under a blanket, stuck a
boiling teacup,
a kettle, plugged it in, and I was in the steam room for a while, and that's how we did it. You know, put a little lemon extract in it or that sort of thing, and away you go, right?
But yes, absolutely. A little camphor or something.
That's so inconvenient to do that when all I have to do is pour a teaspoon or something and give it to stick it in their throat, in their mouth, and they're good.
Yeah, except that teaspoon contained all kinds of artificial flavorings and drugs that we don't need.
Oh, Martin, you're such a stick in the mud.
Yes.
Make life so difficult for me.
For mother. And mother. How about the fever thing?
Yeah. That's right. It drops the fever, right?
Well, at the first sign of child getting fever, oh my God, your forehead's hot. We better go and get you some, I don't know what they get him, Midol or something. I don't know what they use now. We've never used that stuff in my house. But anyway, so yeah, child has, child's Tylenol, right? That's what they use. Anyway, do you really need to knock back the fever? Have you thought, why is the child having a fever? I mean, it's a natural response of the immune system to an invading, typical viral situation where the immune system is actually raising the temperature of the body in its attempt to cook, to kill the virus. The body will survive it, the virus will not.
That's right, and I think that's a great word that you use, cook the virus. And the body's capable of doing that. It's just,
right.
I remember when my sons were young and they were sick, it was just like, oh, you know, I just felt so bad that they were...
Yeah, you wanted to do something for them because they were not okay.
Right.
And yet, I mean, that's how you do it. You let the kid warm up. I mean, yes, if it's too high, you know, if it's in the danger zone, then, yeah, you need to deal with it. But you have many ways to cool the child down. I mean, you can start by taking their clothes off, or you can maybe give them a cool bath.
Pardon me. You just reminded me of a very funny thing that happened when I was in my 20s, and I went over to visit a friend of mine, and she was looking after a baby who was about 2 years old, and the baby had a fever, and and the baby was howling and screaming because she was trying to cool the baby down, and what she was doing was putting the baby in ice cold water.
Ice cold?
Ice cold. It was cold. Oh my goodness, it was so cold. And I was like, what are you doing? She said, I'm trying to cool the baby. I said, yeah, well, you're not shock treatments. I said, just, you know, she was totally flustered. The baby was howling as loud as it could. And I said, no, I put the water out. I said, let's just put some nice warm water in, right?
Yeah,
put,
30 put degrees, not 10.
There, -4 with ice cubes, right? So, and the baby got in there and it brought her temperature down and... She was happy, right? Oh,
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
nice, right? You know.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
said we can put a little cold water in every once in a while just to cool it down a little bit more, but the baby stopped crying right away. She was happy. She stopped fussing, and it was good. But I was like, I was just like, I can't believe you tried to put it in that. Else am I going to cool it? Yeah, everybody would have screamed if they'd done that. So it's part, you know, it's like. Cold, it's relative, right?
Yeah,
if somebody's
right.
got a fever, you don't, you know, and you're not, Finnish or Norwegian.
You go for a mild temperature differential.
Yeah, not a massive one. Unless you're Norwegian and you want to do one of those, like, saunas and then run through the snow and jump into a frozen lake.
Which works,
yeah.
That's a fantastic detoxification method because when you heat the body, you're driving the toxins out towards the surface. So when you then leap into the cold thing, it actually expels it, sort of like, it all squirts. So anything that's been brought close to surface is just expelled. So that's what you do. You just heat it up to max and then chill it. And then heat it up to max and chill it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually a very valid detox method. It works on most things other than the industrial toxins, you know, the lead and mercury and all of that nasty stuff. It doesn't work so well for that.
And that we don't really recommend it for one-year-old babies.
No. Oh, no. Although, if that kid survives that, he'll be really strong.
Yeah. That's right.
I don't know. I'm not being very nice. I would not advise this.
No. Okay, so we've got alternatives to cough syrups, and we need to understand that when children are sick, they're sick for a reason, right? And there are times, if they've got a really, really high fever, maybe they need to go to the hospital or to the doctor. It could be something else. But, I mean, we're talking mostly with just the normal flu.
Yeah, I mean, there were things like the scarlet fever, stuff.
But if you're keeping the kid home from school for a couple of days because they've got the flu, there's other, most of the time I think that the medication you give them doesn't make any difference at all, and they just naturally get better after a couple
right.
of days.
And if you thought about it, the reason the kid got the flu is because his pH was off. You know, it's probably too acidic, and it's because it's not eating the right kind of food. I mean, go to the beginning. The reason you're getting the kid sick is because you're not feeding it right. Duh.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, I personally am a huge believer in homeopathics. I believe that homeopathy is wonderful. It's non-habit forming, it's non-toxic, and it works on all of those mild things. And my wife and I raised our two kids on homeopathics. They did not have medical care whatsoever, you know, other than the stitches from falls and accidents that split things open.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to our next topic.
Okay, well, then now that you've now that your kid is toxic and troubled, he probably needs ADD or ADHD drugs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is not funny, you know, the ADHD problem is rising. The ADHD as such really is one of the steps on a spectrum. The spectrum starts somewhere with autism and goes through Asperger's and other tics through to ADD and ADHD. You know, it's a whole spectrum of essentially screwed up brain, neurological problems. I'm personally convinced that these problems arise because of high levels of industrial toxins in the bodies. And I believe that the ticket is the detox, especially using zeolite, not Ritalin or other amphetamines. And yet, you know, there's this movement of the by the pharmaceutical companies to screen children in schools with the help of the educators and administrators and administer to these children forcibly these psychotropic drugs. It's just insane. Yeah,
pretty crazy.
Yes, I can't say enough about this. I remember this one lady calling me up, buying a dozen bottles of the amino acids from us. I'm saying, gosh, you're getting quite a bit. And she says, yeah, it's for my grandson. He says, Grandma, we can't afford it, but would you please buy the smart pills for me? And it's you know, when he was taking the aminos, he did not have the brain problems because it corrects the toxicity and improves the brain function, lowers the inflammation in the brain, so the kid is actually functioning.
Huh.
Hey, okay. What else do we have on this wonderful list? I guess vaccines would belong here, huh?
Yeah, that's vaccines, kind of along the same level.
Yeah, vaccines made the number two on this lovely list. Again, we vaccinate our kids because of fear. We are pumped full of fear that the child is going to die if we don't do X. But the truth is, they don't die. They don't even get significantly damaged. Most of these illnesses are simply inconvenience to the parent. You know, when your child gets small chickenpox, it's probably going to cause you to stay home for 10 days with it. So that is missed work, right? That's inconvenient. In the days when mothers used to take care of families and didn't work outside the home, that was no big deal. But now that, I don't know what, two-thirds of women are employed, this is inconvenient. So that's why they would perhaps feel compelled to use a vaccine to prevent this illness in the first place. But it's not really helping the child. I remember in the early days, we had maybe three or four illnesses that were considered serious enough that it was worth to vaccinate a child to prevent it. You know, smallpox, tetanus, polio. You know, they were bad enough that you'd want to do it. These days, we have vaccines for flu. I mean, it's just pathetic. It's an invention that's counterproductive, really. I mean, you're loading the immune system with stuff that you shouldn't load it with for an advantage or for a gain that's so minimal. It's just wrong. And it's not in every vaccine, but some vaccines are killed with mercury still. If it's a thimerosal on the vaccine that you're considering to give to your child, do not. Because methylmercury is just one of the most quickest ways to autism. And again, you will probably read studies that say there's absolutely no proof that there's a direct link between methylmercury and autism. Well, the no proof is there because of how they structured the studies. I believe that the autoimmune disease rises as a result of a total toxic load that's inflicted on the body. The metaphor I use is how you're loading your camel. You know, you're loading 20-pound bags on top of your camel. First 30, 40 bags, he doesn't mind. 50 bags, he's straining. And at some point, you put the last bag on the camel and you break his back. At this point, you can't just unload one or two bags. At this point, you have a camel with a broken back, not an overloaded camel. You have a broken back camel. So you need to unload everything and put the camel into medical care, hope that he will someday fix his back, and he will probably never be as good as he would have been had you never broken his back in the first place.
Yeah, and between vaccines and autism, there's, you know, strong connections. You'd mentioned that. But one U.S. study found that children who received vaccines containing thimerosal, which is almost 50% mercury, were more than twice as likely to develop autism than children who did not.
Right. This is the statistics-based medicine, yeah?
Yeah. And it's been, actually, mercury has been removed from a number of the regular childhood vaccines because of safety worries, but it's still present in other vaccines people might get, which, you know, like you said, like the flu one and that sort of stuff.
Right. But it's, you know, mercury is just the worst culprit of them all, you know, mercury, lead, cadmium, and other heavy metals. But even formaldehyde, which is commonly used in these things, is no friend of your immune system. So it's these convenience vaccines that they are adding into the picture, you know. 25 years ago, there were something like 6 or 7 vaccines. Now it looks like there are about 35 that a child is given by the time he's 2 years old. That's what I'm talking about, overloading your camel.
Right.
You know, the kid's immune system can handle some assaults, but not all. So if you overdo it, you break him. When you break him, you have autistic boy, or you have a girl with fibromyalgia or rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that the orthodox medical opinion is that autism is genetic, and of course in the 1980s autism rates were about 6 in 10,000 children.
Yeah.
And today they're 1 in 150 children.
Right. And the genes the genes have changed that quickly? Hard.
Yeah, in 30 years. It's amazing.
But you know, they're mistaking genetic. Yeah, they're mistaking genetic with cultural.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning this. Yes, the toxins are passed from the mother into the child. You know, this has been documented and shown. The umbilical cord blood contains toxins. So it goes to follow that if the mother is toxic, the child will be toxic. And so every succeeding generation is more toxic than the one before. Especially because if you have a daughter that was born to a toxic mother and you loaded her up with stuff, by the time she's childbearing age, she's, I don't know, give me a number, twice or three times as toxic as her mother. So the chance of the next generation child being, you know, nearly autistic or completely autistic is greatly increased. That's why we're seeing these rising rates. Every succeeding generation is more toxic.
Yeah, there was a book actually written by David Kirby that called Evidence of Harm, Mercury and Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy.
Uh-huh.
And he cited studies that showed that poisons and vaccines are a major cause of learning disabilities, autism, and mental retardation in children. So the interesting thing about when this came out was the drug companies then lobbied to get a rider attached to the Homeland Security bill to prevent people from suing them for damage done by vaccines.
Right, because vaccines are allegedly good for people. Here's an interesting point. That the medical establishment says everybody has to get vaccinated or else it's not working. Right?
Yeah.
But here's the point. If the vaccines were working, the people whose children are vaccinated won't get sick, correct?
Right.
So what does it matter if I choose to not vaccinate my child? I'll take the risk. I'll let my kid get the chicken pox. And if you have your child vaccinated against chicken pox, then your child is safe, is covered. My kid's sick. That's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
So why are they legislating that it's no. It will be enforced. You cannot bring a child to school if it has not been vaccinated. I mean, this is the kind of lunacy that the pharmaceutical companies are pushing from the political side of the spectrum, is that you are actually forcing people to vaccinate their children against their conviction and will just because they need to send them to the public school system. That is wrong.
Yeah. So recently, they made a hepatitis B vaccine and approved it for giving to all babies in the United States at birth.
Right.
And it's a preventative vaccination because most babies don't have hepatitis B.
I mean, how many people get hepatitis B these days?
Good question. They did a number of peer-reviewed studies, and they found a relationship between hep B vaccination and infant deaths, both in the U.S. and Europe.
Oh,
so it linked to sudden infant death syndrome, multiple sclerosis, and numerous chronic autoimmune disorders.
Right.
Some doctors began speaking out against the dangers of this vaccine. And in fact, the debate is probably over because it went to court, and the court ruled in favor of the plaintiff who had developed systemic lupus
erythrosis
as a result of receiving the Hep B vaccine. And the U.S. government was forced to admit that the vaccine led to the development of the disease, and unfortunately, the plaintiff died before the decision was made. But, you know, it just goes to show that we've got all these kind of miracle things coming out, and some have maybe a little bit of a dark side, right?
The main point here is that a poison is not an answer to being already toxic or increasing the toxic load on already toxic people. Can only lead to complications of toxicity. So, I don't know, to make it really simple, since when more is a solution to too much?
Right. Okay.
We don't need more technology. We need more nature. You know, there is no technological solution to food. I mean, we can improve the food storage technology, but we cannot improve on the food nutrients. We cannot really get into this genetic manipulation. Yeah, hybridization is a good thing because it allows us to genetically select better foods. But once we start messing with the species, you know, once we start stuffing cold water fish into tomatoes, we're asking for it.
Yeah.
You know, it was not supposed to be that you can mate donkeys with horses. You know, the reason they're sterile is because nature doesn't want it to continue like that.
Right. So when you're taking all these things and your body breaks down, it's not working very well, you probably get a bit depressed, right?
Yes, that's the liver load. I mean, depression is directly tied to the toxic levels in the liver. And, of course, liver is your primary filtration organ, kidneys being the secondary. So, yes, if your liver's toxic, you're probably depressed. So your depression solution isn't in taking more toxins like Prozac, if I need to pick one. Instead, it would be to do a liver detox. I mean, when is it that you come to your doctor saying, I'm feeling depressed, and he says, well, let's cleanse out everything and let's fix your diet and let's see if this thing goes away? When did this happen?
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
Not in an allopathic office. They'll say, well, I got this prescription pad here. Let me prescribe something that will make it easy. But since when more is the answer for being too much?
Never.
Never, yep. There's no way you can poison yourself out of a toxicity.
Right. So we take these drugs that try to reverse the problem that's caused by other drugs.
Which only is, we told about the whack-a-mole game. You know, you're trying to hunt gophers with a hammer. You know, every time you show up at the door, he'll disappear in the hole and you say, ah, he's gone. Well, he's not gone, he's just underground.
Right.
So he'll pop up somewhere else. And of course, because you kept him underground, he's probably mated with his partner, and by the time you get to it, you'll have sex to deal with. Anyway, about depression, I would like to point out to people that that treating children's depression should be done with sunlight, detoxification, oxygen, healthful diet, and singing. You know, like those kind of natural things that will change the child's physiology. Of course, depressed people don't like to do that. They like to pull the curtains, make the room dark, curl up somewhere with some depressing music. Anyway.
There you go. So, and if you are depressed, you can look at some natural ways to deal with it. Like
right.
You're talking about the liver detox, that would be
yes.
One thing.
Definitely.
Playing some good music, getting into a good environment.
Yep, sunlight, nature, walks in pretty terrain, not down the paved streets lined with strip malls and high-rises. That is not what your soul will sink from. Head into the hills. Get on a horse. Get a dog and walk with it. I guess that will have to do. Talking about this makes me depressed. I'm thinking of all the people that have called me over time with these horrendous problems that they're trying to deal with. You know, parents of children whose mind have just become clogged, you know, whether it's with industrial type of toxins or just metabolic toxins from not eating well, or a combination of both, or not going outdoors, you know. Teenage kids tend to turn into indoor, I don't know what, they just get into this sort of I'm not going out mode.
Yeah, I'm playing on my video games and I'm watching TV, so
yeah.
I'm on my computer, I'm on the internet, so yeah. Why would I do that?
Yeah, all of these activities, they just simply are, what's it called, self-feeding loops.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't have easy answers because it's really hard to take somebody who's already 15 by the hand and lead him out into the ballpark and say, okay, son, let's play ball. because by the time the kid's 15, he wants to be with his peers, not with his parents.
Right.
Anyway, it's not simple, but we certainly can do our part and at least do the nutrition and detoxification. That we can control, I believe.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. And maybe, so and maybe just break the damn with the video game.
There you go, yeah. Turn off the TV.
Oh, just smash it with a club.
There you go. Get out into nature. It's amazing how much better people feel on a beach.
You got it. So I hope that we have managed to throw some light, some sunshine into the possibilities. You know, the biggest driver of these behaviors is fear, and we must not give in to fear. Even if it's dangerous, we must understand that we are constructed, we're designed to live in a dynamic environment. We cannot be in static balance. We have to exist in dynamic balance. And dynamic balance always assumes and allows for uncertainty. And yes, it's possible that there is going to be a negative outcome, but we cannot give in to that.
That's right. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to talk specifically about some of their issues around what we've talked about today and in previous episodes, what should they do?
Well, do some reading. Life-enthusiast.com carries a lot of information about all of these topics. It's all there. Type in the search word in the search box. You'll see all kinds of pages that relate. And if you don't see it, call us. It's 1-866-543-3388. We'll be happy to give you some insights, some guidance. We don't practice medicine. We don't diagnose. We just simply give you self-educational options. The answer is not out there. It's in you. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to us. This is Life Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.